Hey guys, quick cold opening here before this episode of Mouse and Castle. Right after we finished recorded, I heard back from Chris Provost of Provost Park Pass, and was able to jump in, and he gave us a firsthand on the ground perspective of the cast member preview. So you'll hear his segment right after we discuss some of the opening developments that we saw at the cast member preview today at the Disney park. So stick around. I hope you enjoy this episode of the Mouse and Castle podcast.
What do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castle.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back. It is the Mouse and Castle Podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad you've joined us. As always, joining me here to talk about all the latest and greatest from the House of the Mouse, it's Mr. Aaron Goins. How's it going, Aaron?
It's going fantastic.
Fantastical. Magical, maybe, even.
Sure.
At literally earlier today, as we record this, were the cast previews, the cast member previews of the opening of Magic Kingdom and Animal Kingdom, two parks.
We're starting to get some information that we didn't have before, kind of what to expect.
Yes, yes. And then we're going to kind of break it down. There's a lot of great Disney food blog. Of course, one of my favorite Disney sources had a lot of breakdowns, a lot of detailed breakdowns of everything they're saying as far as some of the social distancing measures. I saw you were on the Twitter looking at, I think it was the line for the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and how they'd modified it with like plexiglass dividers, if I saw that right.
Yes,
it's gonna be different.
Plexiglass dividers in the queue, which you know, one of the big things about Disney is the theming and the kind of getting lost in the theming and the world. And I think the plexiglass may take away from that a little bit.
Hot take.
It's needed. It's needed.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they shouldn't have it, but it will be a different visual experience.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those. It might explain maybe a little bit better why they are what we're seeing, at least in the images and pictures today. Why they're more willing to open even in the midst of a rise in cases in Florida specifically. Just the extent of which these measures go. The park is changing very, very much so.
Yeah, and there were some encouraging things I saw in the preview stuff. I don't know how much we're going to start kind of jump right into it, or if you want to...
Let's dive in. I wanted to know, because we have a couple articles in the notes here that you guys can follow along with us, but I want to know what kind of jumped out to you most as what maybe felt most different, most non-Disney, the least magical necessity of the pandemic era that we're in.
I mean, I think I didn't even think about them putting up any like additional barriers like that.
Yeah.
It makes sense now in retrospect, but you know, even on the, you know, kind of on the monorail, they're putting up these partitions, they put, you know, plexiglass in some of the queues, like some of that idea. I figured there'd be a lot of spacing, but that stuff being up was kind of surprising, but it makes sense.
Yes.
So that would be kind of the most surprising thing. But there wasn't a lot that I saw that jumped out to me that I was like, oh, that's going to ruin the experience, you know. And it's still very early. You know, that was just the cast member preview.
True.
Well, it's not even a true representation of kind of what the crowds are going to be like or how long the wait times are going to be. I was a little surprised at some of the longer wait times that were being reported because I just assumed with a cast member preview and with all the, you know, all the COVID stuff going on, that it would just be like walk on to any ride. But I think I had heard up to a 45-minute wait for Splash Mountain at one point.
I have no idea why. It's
right. Yeah. That ride may be an outlier
because that's fair, though,
in the news, but still it just was kind of like, oh, okay. So there will be, you know, when you go, even though it's limited capacity, it's not going to be like just walk right onto any ride.
Yes, yes. It's a lot of what I expected. The ground markers for various queues where they've really kind of extended the area Attractions Magazine had the photo you're talking about with some of these plexiglass dividers that have been installed in some of the queues, especially as you go through the ride experience. Famously, the classic stretching room from the Haunted Mansion, stretch no more, as you will literally walk right through it. They will not be gathering, makes sense, but they will not be gathering a crowd inside the stretching room for the Haunted Mansion ride.
That does make sense. Trams weren't running, which is, you know, that would be something to take note of. You know, people are used to just, you know, parking and jumping on a tram and not really having to walk very far to get to the entrance. But I don't know if that's going to be a thing that will be, you know, for the whole time that they're going to do this, or maybe just for this cast preview.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'll hit you with some other quick measures that we're seeing. They're using a virtual wait list for some of the shops inside the parks, which is something that evidently has already been in use at Disney Springs, which I didn't realize, but where you literally can be in the app and jump into a virtual queue once a store hits capacity for shopping and get a notification for when you can actually shop. Not to mention, Kilimanjaro Safaris is one of the rides that you can remove your mask on. Evidently, they've trained their folks that with the plexiglass dividers that they have in the vehicles, Aaron, this really does seem to be the go-to. The plexiglass screen seems to be like one of the go-to systems here for sanitization, I guess.
Could you imagine being a plexiglass manufacturer in the Orlando area right now?
Oh my gosh.
Business is booming.
Right? I remember going to my local bank here when this all kicked off, and they had literally just built out of 2x4s these plexiglass dividers that they just placed on the middle of their desks, which is just a kind of an odd experience. But now, maybe I use myself as an example. I'm someone who's already seen this in shops around where I live and businesses and restaurants, so I'm kind of used to it. So maybe it won't be too jarring at Disney. What do you think, based on what we've seen today, how jarring of an experience do you think this is for the average Disney goer? Is this something we're already used to as a society, that people will just expect this?
I think it'll depend on maybe where you live in the country. I think the closer you are to a big city, the more likely you are going to be already used to this. But I have, you know, in the job I do, different people on my team work in other smaller cities, and it's apparently a completely different thing. Like when I go out, everyone's wearing masks.
Yes.
In the Philadelphia area. And you can't even go into a store unless you're wearing a mask. But I have a coworker that works in Texas, and she said that when she goes out, maybe 70% of the people are wearing masks, and a lot of people aren't wearing them in stores at all. And stores will put a sign up, but they don't enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it just depends. Maybe I know for me, like I go out enough and have to put on that mask enough. I've kind of already gotten used to it. It's not a big deal. I carry one with me at all times. And then we just went out for the first time with the kids the other day. And so I told my wife, I said, this is kind of like going to be, you know, a preview of what Disney World is going to be like, because we had to put masks on them, you know, get everybody kind of ready to go and go into the store. It just seems like something that by the time my trip comes up in October, we'll be so used to it that I don't think it's going to be a huge deterrent of having fun.
Yeah, I certainly don't think it's, I mean, just construct this situation in your mind. I don't think there's going to be anybody who made all of their plans to go to Disney World this year and then gets there and like, what is this whole mask thing? You know, like that's not going to be a big surprise, I don't think.
They know, yeah, at this point you should know what you're in for.
Yeah.
And it's kind of your own fault if you don't, you know. It's probably better off if you're averse to the whole idea of wearing masks and you think it might not be the best time. Just don't go now. Wait, you know, 2021. It's a 50-year anniversary. Maybe that would be a good time to reschedule.
I mean, it's not. I don't think it's a far stretch to assume that many, many people are going to do that. In fact, I'd like to hear from you if you're listening to the podcast and you're deciding right now, or maybe you have decided what to do with your Disney plans for the rest of the year. Hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, at Mouse and Castle, because I want to kind of get a feel for what people are doing. Because that's sort of where me and Savannah are, is that we can't, based on our job. We're both in the military, and like, we're under considerably higher lockdown than the average person. Like, I was just allowed to leave my local town for the first time in 4 months, like, by actual, wow, like, by uniform code of military justice, like, the orders, which, because, like, if, in our case, like, we're supporting combat operations and stuff like that, so they're just, like, they can't risk stopping. And there's a lot of, I think, there's two layers of essential workers and non-essential workers, which, you know, everyone's job is essential to them, but Disney, I still think, to the average American, we don't think of that as, like, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but my first instinct is to think we as a society don't think of Disney as something that's a natural part of the American life and experience and has to be open. But at the same time, you know, I saw plenty of jokes when they closed of, like, this is the first time since major national disasters that they've ever closed. And so maybe Disney's the barometer by which we can measure how serious something like this is.
Yeah, and I know there's criticisms too, because, like, Florida right now is spiking in cases, and there could be a case made for, hey, maybe they open too early, and it'll be interesting to see kind of what the crowds do look like and how ready people are to go back.
Yeah.
Because of the situations. I know my wife's already kind of getting on me, because I already booked everything for October as, like, all, like, kind of set in stone type stuff. You know, I booked flights, I got everything. And so I'm like, yeah, we're going in October. And she's like, I don't know if I want to go if cases are still going up. And, you know, so there's still that, I think people are still kind of iffy.
Yeah.
And then there's probably going to be even some of that kind of, like, if I go to Disney, am I going to look like I don't care about the crisis? You know, like,
there's the public perception and that really plays, you know, a role in this. Because you know what everybody loves to do? You go take your picture in front of the castle, right? Like, I was scrolling.
People are going to go to Disney on the down low. Like,
incognito.
the same people that are going to the beach right now and just not telling their friends. Those are the people that are going to go to Disney and not tell their friends. Like, hey, this is a non-Facebook Disney trip. We're going to Disney, but we're not telling anybody.
It sounds kind of wonderful, actually.
Back to the positive, though. One thing I saw that I thought was really cool is that they're going to have these relaxation stations.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have, like, designated spaces where you can go, and they'll have social distance tables. And you can go and you can take off your mask and you can relax. And I think that's such a good idea, because that was one of my concerns, is walking around the park, especially if it's hotter and you're basically, like, you know, you got this mask right against your face all day. If you can't ever take that thing off, it is going to start to feel stifling. And so if you start to get to a point where you're like, hey, I just need a breather, I need to stop, like, you can go to one of these relaxation stations. It seems like they have a decent number of them. And go and kind of chill, and everybody take your mask off and sit at your table as a family.
It's kind of brilliant.
Hang out.
Yeah, it's kind of brilliant. It's especially, like, if you have kids, especially, you know, masks aren't going to be comfortable in the Florida heat, and, you know, kids aren't. It's harder to explain and have young kids to understand the necessity for them. So I think, honestly, I didn't even think of that, but it's a brilliant idea.
One thing I'm really curious about, and this is kind of maybe a little bit more of a unique situation for me, but I know others will be wondering the same thing. So I don't know if anybody has heard, definitely let us know, but having a child with a disability, and I know when we went out to the store the other day and we all put our masks on, my daughter, who is autistic, she just immediately took it off, you know, and there wasn't really any kind of explaining to her, reasoning with her, like, hey, no, you really need to leave this on. It's a rule. Like, she didn't, it doesn't quite connect with her.
Yeah.
So I wonder how they're going to accommodate, not to people, because I get there's people that have respiratory issues, and that's something that it's easier to kind of communicate with. But I'm curious about people that have cognitive issues.
Yeah.
And if they're not able to even understand the concept of leaving on a mask. That's something I'm curious how Disney's going to deal with that. If it's just going to be kind of a hard line and say, hey, if you're not able to wear a mask, you just can't come into the park. Or are they going to have exceptions for people that have those type of, those type of situations?
I have no idea, because I haven't seen anything on how they would deal with any kind of special needs situations. So I'd be very curious. If you've heard, by all means, hit us up on our social media or something and let us know if you point us that, right direction.
Disney is usually very accommodating.
Yeah.
So I imagine they would be. But at the same time, this is a different kind of situation where it's a health risk, where just because you may have a health issue where you can't wear a mask, that's also putting other people at risk.
Yeah.
And so that might be something that Disney's not willing to, budge on, because they don't want it to become a liability.
Yeah. I think it'll be, I guess let us know if you hear, because we'll have to see, because they everything else is so thorough already that we're seeing with their setup. Like even the check-in process, the security process, they've completely overhauled that. In fact, I'm looking at it here. Basically, now you'll put all your electronics and anything metal into a clear plastic bag when you go through the bag check. And this is from the Disney Food Blog. We'll link to it. But basically, this can add a lot of time when you think about all the people going through trying to separate out anything that might ping the metal detector and put it in a clear bag. If your bag goes off, if the metal detector goes off, then you dump the contents of your bag into a bin so they can put eyes onto it without touching all of your stuff, which just seems weird to me. Like there's these bins or totes sitting there that you just flip my backpack upside down, shake. But I guess that's what you got to do.
Yeah, and that's something that I learned the last time when I was at Disney World. I decided to go over to the parks even on my way to the airport.
Okay.
So I had my roller bag with me. And I decided to go to Magic Kingdom, and they did. I thought maybe they would just be like, oh, he's got this big roller bag. Like, we'll just kind of pat it down real quick and let him through. No, they literally announced to the line behind me, this is going to take a while.
Oh, God, you're that guy.
They made me like the center of attention. I was so embarrassed. And they opened up my roller bag and went through everything. Like my entire, I stuffed, like 5 days worth of clothes.
This would have been the bachelor party trip, right?
Yes.
I think I remember this.
So yeah, that was an interesting time. Now I know, but yeah, they are very thorough. My point being, they're very thorough when they check these bags. And so I think it makes sense that they're coming up with a process that they don't necessarily have to touch everything, because that's going to put them at risk and put you at risk of the transfer. So it's nice that there's at least an option that you can put it in this plastic bag and then they can just see all your stuff without touching it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Oh man, I'm looking at some of the pictures of these relaxation stations. They look pretty good. Why? I hope this stays around long after the pandemic. I want a relaxation station.
Yeah.
Disney's
exactly.
Kind of like an airport, right? It's a lot of walking around from point A to point B. They need like those mobile massage parlors. I mean, they already have all the restaurants and everything, so maybe relaxation stations a perfect fit. That'd be pretty nice.
Yeah, until the relaxation station is completely packed at all times and you just can never find a table.
Well, yeah, there's that.
That'll be the one of the challenges too. Like when you go to Disney, there's always that process of like ordering food, and you get your food and then you're kind of hunting for a table.
Oh yeah, we've all
been
there.
And you see that open table and you kind of beeline to it. But now they have, they have tables that literally have like a sticker on the top that says this table is not available, because of social distancing. And so now it's going to be a game of not only finding an open table, but then finding an open table that doesn't have a sticker on it. It's a new layer added.
I really wonder, because I see that in like the local Starbucks where they just left all the tables there, but put stickers on every other one. And it's like, just don't sit down on this one. Just move the table, guys. It would make it a little bit simpler.
Or put the chairs on top of it or something to make it really obvious that you can't sit there. So
it'd be nice.
It doesn't tease you.
Yeah. Yeah. But. Well, the other thing that we have now clear pictures of is, listen, Pretty in Pink, man.
I have opinions.
Cinderella Castle. Listen, there's one thing that I can count on when recording an episode of Mouse and Castle is I know Aaron's going to have a strong opinion on the updated photos of the Cinderella Castle refurbishment. Hit me with your latest impression
So when I first saw the, because I mean they've been show there have been pictures throughout this process of them updating it, so it's not like it's a big shock. But this is kind of the first time people are getting really clear pictures from like a ground view.
Yes, the traditional like will be. Instagram picture posing in front of the castle.
Right. So when I first saw some of the first images, I was kind of like, okay, maybe I was a little too concerned, and it looks fine. There's a lot more gray. You know, the bottom half has got that kind of gray stone look, and the top half is really what kind of got pink. But the pink is pretty subtle.
It's actually not that, it's not, certainly not hot pink.
Yeah, it's a subtle pink, and then the gray looks nice. They update, they kind of gave the gray a nice pop to it. So all of that I'm fine with.
Sacré bleu.
What's really standing out to me is the blue, you know, the spires, the rooftops.
A view, hello, the blue.
whatever the shade of blue they picked doesn't seem to fit with the rest of the look of the castle.
So I would, as a guy who, here's a little insight into Riley's growing up. As a guy who lived a small portion of my childhood across the border from Afghanistan. It's a long story. I won't get into it. But there's a stone. There's a jewel. Well, not a jewel, but a particular kind of precious stone that is local to the mountains in Afghanistan called lapis. And that is the exact color of blue, my friend, that they have painted this castle.
Yeah, I don't like the blue at all, and it's almost like almost got a purplish hue to it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I really kind of wish they had gone with a different shade of blue. And I just, my son was sitting next to me. We were kind of looking at these pictures, and
yeah,
and he did. He I have was an impression? Kind of complaining about it, and he was like, "I think it looks cool."
You're like, "Shut up!"
So I'm like, "Whatever. You're 8. Get out of here." But I said, "Well, it's probably good. You think it looks cool because you're ultimately the target audience, not me."
Yes.
So as long as you think it looks cool. But I think I've said before on the podcast, I really liked that the Disney castle felt like a castle. It felt like a real castle that you could find on some European countryside.
Mm, yeah.
And now it looks like a castle that should be in an amusement park. And
yeah.
And so it is an amusement park. So I guess maybe that's fine. But I don't know. I
fully
like
embraced the fairy tale look. And like even the gold trimming is a lot goldier too, which lends to that look.
Yeah, the gold trim. Honestly, the gold trim and the pink is what I was worried about. And the pink actually doesn't bother me that much. And the gold trim, I kind of didn't notice. It's the blue.
Yeah, it's a
which is my favorite color. But you know, bright blue isn't what I really.
I just
wanted
sent
to see.
You, sir. I sent you a little link on Messenger just so you can see how I literally bet you they based this color palette off of that stone.
Oh, really?
It is unnatural how much the two shades look. So if you're sitting at home, Google it.
Absolutely.
Lapis lazuli. It's a beautiful stone. It's an odd look for a castle. I mean, maybe for a countryside castle, no. For a fairy tale castle, that's obviously the look they're going for here. So I can see that. They also updated the sort of character experiences, because now, of course, character meet and greets are out the window. Parades are out the window. So they have what they call character cavalcades and entertainment.
Which is basically a parade.
Right? I was looking at this. Basically, they just loop around the front of the castle. But I'm like, doesn't that defeat the point of like not having everyone bunch up to go see Mickey Mouse? As Mickey Mouse is running around the front of the castle, not all the kids are going to want to just rush and go see Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but it seemed like they weren't really running it at certain times, or at least not announced times.
Maybe that's it.
The difference where it's kind of like if you announce, okay, the cavalcade's coming through at 11 a.m., then you get a crowd. But if they just kind of come through the park at random times and don't really announce a schedule, then it's a little bit more, oh, cool, look. You know, because it happens sometimes. You're in the park and suddenly Winnie the Pooh walks by and you're not expecting it. So there's no crowd and it's kind of a chance meeting.
Yes.
So I think that's kind of maybe what they're going for.
An experience I'd say that's I've seen most common in Hollywood studios of characters kind of roaming back and forth through the parks. But within the Toy Story area and Galaxy's Edge, it's something that's very common. So I could see that. And there are pictures of like Merida on horseback, by the way, riding a Clydesdale.
Which looked awesome.
I mean, and Gaston
Yeah.
Running around. Which, I mean, it's kind of brilliant because you're not going to have, you can't really get that close to a character. You're not going to have a small kid rush up and try to give Merida or Gaston a hug because they're up on a 9-foot tall horse. Basically.
Right, like all the characters are on some sort of a vehicle. They're in a float, or they're in a vehicle, or they're on a horse. It's this natural barrier, which I think is actually a really cool idea, because it would have been a lot worse if they had just said, okay, no characters, you know, no, because you're not going to be able to go and get your normal picture with a character like you're used to. But this is a new experience. I don't know that we've ever seen Merida on a horse.
No, certainly not Gaston.
So that's new. So that's a cool new experience that you're going to get to see and get to take pictures of. And, you know, you can still do the selfie and, you know, all that. So
yeah.
I think it's a really creative way of getting the characters out into the park.
Animal Kingdom's doing a similar thing where they have different characters cruising down Discovery River, like Pocahontas. And Chip, Dale, and Goofy also cruise down the river. So you can kind of see some of the characters just, you know, on a riverboat, which is, again, the definition of inaccessible, but you get your cool little photo op running around.
Kind of like, doesn't Fantasmic at Disneyland do that?
That's true. I guess similar concept, yeah.
They all go by on boats.
Exactly, exactly. All right, so we're joined by Chris Provost of Provost Park Pass.
Yes.
A YouTube channel, which before today I was not familiar with. But
I'm so glad you found us.
I got to tell you, man, I saw a couple of Instagram photos, and that's how I found the channel. Okay. And you were at the very moment live streaming your experience at the cast member preview.
Yes.
For Magic Kingdom's opening. So what a pleasure it is to have you give us the sort of on the ground perspective. Thanks for coming on Mouse and Castle.
Well, thank you so much. We're honored to be here and glad that you found us. My wife, she maintains our Instagram page, Amanda. She's awesome at it. And she's the better half of Provost Park Pass.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we were able to connect, and I'm just going to dive right in. Walk me through the process of what it was like walking into the entrance that we all know so well. Disney World.
Let's go through it. I'll start at the very beginning. I was a little bit nervous. To be honest with you, I was nervous on a couple of reasons. I was nervous, one, was it going to still feel magical to me? And two, I was also nervous. I'm like, what's it going to be like? Am I going to get there, and am I not going to feel safe? Is it going to not feel safe to me? And I just want to say this, it was absolutely 100% magical. The magic is not lost at all. I loved it so much. Walking in and seeing the castle, I actually almost got a little emotional. And as far as the safety measures that Disney's gone, I felt safe the entire time. The social distancing, people were adhering to it. They had hand sanitizer everywhere. And I brought my own stuff there to make sure that we had our masks on. But I felt very good. And it felt so good to be back there. I just loved it.
Nice. Well, I kind of got that sense just from the pictures and what we were talking about earlier in the show that they've gone to pretty great lengths. It's not just like the stickers on the ground. Paint a little bit of a picture for some of the rides.
For example, you know how the rides, the lines will crisscross back and forth, right?
Yeah.
So you go down, you do a U-turn, you come back down. Well, Disney's gone through the way of if you go down, you do a U-turn, they leave an extra gap between that. So now instead of just doing a sharp turn, you have a aisleway between you. If they couldn't do that, if for some reason they couldn't do that, you had to go right back and walk back past people, they put up these big, huge, giant barrier and plastic barriers that have big stickers that say, don't touch these. And so you are literally separated from people within the line, which I found to be fantastic. Then they have the stickers all around the floor, and where it shows you exactly where to stand, so you know where to be standing within your group to know that you are in that little social distance bubble.
Was it sort of intuitive to follow? Some like hands-on cast members that kind of had to instruct you?
So they actually, Disney has this thing called the Incredicrew. And they go around to help people who are maybe having difficult, like if somebody forgets to have their mask off, they'll remind them like, oh, put your mask on. You know, some people I saw, every once in a while I see somebody who their mask would slip down under their nose. And then just remind them. they were very helpful. It was very, very intuitive. I mean, you just knew exactly what to do, and it was very easy to do. And they had all the stickers were standing that says stop, stand here, let you know until they go to the next spot. So it was very intuitive.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's I'm always of two minds as we've really closely followed how Disney's approached the reopening, because at the same time, you read the news about all the differences of what the park experience is going to be, and you wonder, is it going to be the same? But at the same time, our whole world around us has changed so much that I feel like it may not be as much of a leap to hear. Because even as you describe it, I'm like, wow, I'm trying to imagine, Disney enforces, how do you enforce these rules without coming off like a jerk? But it sounds like they've kind of figured a way to, and I think maybe there's a certain level of if you get the majority crowd buy-in, there's a sort of natural social positive pressure.
What I noticed is when I would stand on my little line, they have these little lines for you to stand on. If I was vigilant about that, and then I would wait for the next one in front of me, and then I stood up the next one, then all the people standing behind me really adhere to it. What I noticed is if you get that wide-eyed and you don't realize it and you start walking, then people start – they kind of start doing what they used to do walking, particularly little children. I noticed that. Little kids. And can you blame them? They're excited. They want to get on the ride. And so – I would just be very vigilant and show that I'm standing my thing. And the second I start doing it, the kids all, if there are ever kids behind me, they did that as well. And it's just the way the world is now. It's different. We are going to be able to, we're getting through it just fine now. And it's different, but it's not, we didn't lose any of the magic.
Real talk though, kind of now having seen it in person and contrasting the decision they made in Disneyland to postpone indefinitely. What's the difference? What's the deal? Why is Disney World ready and Disneyland is not?
Fantastic question. It's because it's the different things, scenarios that are going on. California is just a different thing going on in Florida. Now, I've heard some people say, Florida got approved when cases weren't spiking down here. They probably wouldn't have been approved. I don't really know if that's the case, because I'm not on the board of directors for Disney, so sure. I don't really know. I just know that California is going through a wholly different phase right now, and they are trying to adhere to their social standards right there of that. They are opening Downtown Disney this week. On the 9th, they'll be opening that. But as far as the park, it's going to be probably a little while before they open that. I was wondering, I heard a lot of people say before I got down here, they're like, Walt Disney World should close. It should not open. It shouldn't be opening. And to be honest with you, I was nervous about it. But once I got down here and went through the experience today, I felt very comfortable. I never felt uncomfortable while I was here, and which that for me is a big deal, because I'm hypervigilant. I got my hand sanitizers. My masks. I'm social distancing to the extreme. But I felt very comfortable the entire time.
Yeah, it is a kind of great test of our ability to sort of collaborate as a community. It's something like a Disney park, because we've seen small scale versions of it in different communities, different states, as to how do you open up places. But the more people are able to, again, social distance and kind of follow these guidelines for the safety of the community, the more we can actually open up and operate. Whereas the less safe people do, and just our own responsibility for our own behavior, the less that takes place. And I think that's maybe a version of what we saw in Disneyland, where they realized we're just not ready yet. And I think it almost, it shows, I don't know where those decisions, what boardroom that decision happens, but I get the sense that at least they're probably applying similar standards to the two locations, and maybe World is just better set up, even in the midst of rising cases in Florida that we're seeing, to be able to address with the different parks the crowd size.
I will say this. I mean, Disneyland is my home park, really. I love Disneyland. I will say this about Disney World. Disney World it's easier, it's more conducive for social distancing. The Fantasyland is a perfect prime example of that. And Walt Disney World, Fantasyland is open. The streets are wider in Walt Disney World. There's more room. Disneyland's a little more compact. So I get that where Fantasyland, Adventureland, for example, is a prime example in Disneyland. Adventureland is one of my favorite lands there, but it narrows. And they did that on purpose when they designed it, because they wanted you to feel like you're in a jungle and have this great experience. Whereas Disney Adventureland in Disney World, it is wider open. And so Disneyland has to be way more cognizant of the social distancing, because it's a smaller park and it is more densely populated. that yeah. makes sense.
No, it does. I don't have like the side-by-side schematic, but even just kind of off the top of my head, thinking of California Adventure, quite literally like Pixar Pier and stuff, it's just sort of a boardwalk along a lake. It's not a lot of room back there.
Yes.
So
yeah,
I can see why that might present more of a challenge, or maybe they just have to figure out how they can operate at a more limited capacity.
Yeah, they will. They will be operating at a more limited capacity. That is 100% for sure. People are asking me all day today, like, what are the numbers? I didn't have the numbers, but I've been told it's probably around 30% is mm-hmm. what they're operating at. It didn't feel too crowded. So I think that's really what they're going to be shooting at. I don't know. It might be a little bit less, might be a little bit more. And I think that Disney will fine tune that percentage of as they see what works and what doesn't work. But yeah, they will definitely be operating at a more limited capacity for sure.
Is it fair to say with the, with the slow opening up of people who already previously had reservations and then maybe restaurant reservations and resort reservations, but it's still not open to, you can't purchase new tickets. Is that sort of their way of, I guess, maybe naturally preventing an overflow, like a sort of natural cutoff for numbers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we work with this company called Getaway Today, and they do a lot of like tickets. They ended up calling us the day of. They're like, hey, just so you know, this is breaking news. Disney's no longer selling tickets. You can't buy tickets for the park. Today's the last day. And this was like June 10th or 11th or somewhere around there. And they're like, so you go out, let your fans know if they're going to buy tickets, do it now because it's halting. And so that is, I think, a way that Disney has done that. It's natural selection, kind of a way that they are limiting. Right now, their priorities are for annual passport holders, Disney Vacation Club members, those people who have bought tickets. If you haven't bought your ticket for Disney this year, you're not going to Disney this year.
You don't see that changing. No. For the remainder. And I guess that it is the sort of natural selection of it for allowing those who've at least already invested their own hard-earned money.
I mean, they're selling ticket packages for next year.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They are not for this year. So I'm assuming what they're trying to do is they're trying to make sure that people who have bought tickets this year are going to get in at a reduced capacity for sure.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. All right. So parting question, kind of, I guess, slightly related to it, but now we've sort of for the first time seen actual up-close pictures of what my co-host Aaron has. It's sort of broken his Disney heart a little bit because he has his own issues, we'll say, with the repainting of Cinderella's castle. I have to ask you, like, seeing it in person, what's your opinion as a longtime Disney fan?
Right. So it's so funny. This is a very divisive topic of people.
It's surprising how controversial this is. Forget anything else, real world politics or anything. Let's talk about the Disney castle.
I love it. It looks way better in person than it does through photos.
Okay.
When I got there, it's the blue, it's almost a little bit of purplish blue. It doesn't really translate well through the photos. The pink, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I absolutely love it, but I don't dislike it. I'm not like one of those people like, hey, thanks, I hate this type of thing.
Yeah.
But
it's
not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I was really prepared for it because when people are posting it online, I thought, what have they done? But then when I saw it, just seeing it in person again, walking down the street and hearing the ambient sound, the music that's going on, hearing everything, and you see the castle, it almost overtakes you with joy and you're like, it's so good. I think it's really good. So,
that's fair.
Is it your close out, Aaron? Aaron, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Aaron, you're gonna be fine. You're gonna get to this just fine. You're gonna like it.
It's the blue. I'm not gonna lie. It's the blue that got him. It's a dark.
Really?
It's like and I mentioned it on the show. It's sort of this interesting, like, if you've ever seen lapis, it's a stone, a precious stone that it has that same sort of super deep dark blue. But it's a very sort of fantasy castle.
Yeah, but it, when you're there, it looks a little. You can see the purple.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So it's not. I will say this: the blues are bluer, the pink is pinker.
Yeah.
Is that a word? And the gray is grayer.
Yeah. So. No, that's true. It is a lot more contrast. Well, I just had to ask you a parting shot. Chris, thank you so much. Tell Mouse and Castle listeners where they can find the YouTube channel and follow what you guys are up to.
Yeah, absolutely. So our name of our YouTube channel is Provost Park Pass. That's P R O V OST Park Pass. And our main park that we mostly go to is Disneyland, but we go to all the different Disney parks around the world. And then you can find us on Instagram. It's Provost Park Pass. And then we also have a Twitter, which, believe it or not, is Provost Park Pass.
Easy.
So Riley, what is your favorite land? Disneyland. Have you ever been to Disneyland?
Wow. Turning the interview about. I like that. World versus land. Is that the question?
Sure, let's go land. Yeah.
Of the two parks, I've got to say, Disneyland is my favorite experience personally.
And within Disneyland, what's your favorite land in Disneyland? Like Tomorrowland, Fantasyland, Adventureland, Frontierland, Toontown. What's your favorite land there, Riley?
I feel like it's a sin as for my Star Wars background to say anything but Batuu. I think I got to go Galaxy's Edge.
Galaxy's Edge. But it's amazing.
It is. I will say this, though. My probably strongest Disney opinion is California Adventure is the most underrated park. It's a great time.
I love California Adventure so much. So our channel, Provost Park Pass, it's trivia about Everland. So for example, like, did you know this, that Adventureland, it's the only land they don't sell churros or popcorn in because they don't want to ruin the ambiance of Adventureland by having those smells. So that's the only land they don't sell that in. Or also, did you know, like in New Orleans Square, if you look up the wrought iron railings, on the buildings there's rust going down the buildings. That's not real rust. That's been drawn on there. The rust is drawn there. So that way you actually, it feels like you are in New Orleans. So that's what Provost Park Pass is all about. It's these trivia and secrets that most people don't know. We have lots of Disney employees and cast members and managers that give us these secrets, and we get to share them with everybody. We love them. And Batuu is amazing. There's a lot of good secrets there. We can go on that all day long.
A lot of Star Wars Easter eggs for this big fan. So, tons. Chris, thank you so much for coming on Mouse and Castle, and we'll be linking to all of your channels as well in the notes for the podcast. So thank you so much, man.
It was an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so it'll be next week on the program. I teased it last week too, but next week is when we have Scott Rifen on live from the park. So he'll be able to give us the skinny on what the experience is really like. He can drop the real dirt on what it's like to go to a Disney park with the I guess slightly more normal crowd. Certainly, I guess more than the cast member previews. So I'm excited to have him on and kind of go through what the
What's his experience? He's going as a annual pass?
Yes, he's going as an annual pass holder. Scheduled, he departs this coming weekend, and we'll be calling him up right in the middle of his annual Disney vacation, not to be stopped by anything. Mr. Scott Rifen, he and his wife will be on their typical trip to Disney, which will be an experience anything less than typical. And I'm excited to get that firsthand from him next week. Theodosia, that means only one thing, folks. We're about to get all musical theater nerdery up in here. Pretty side in Georgia. He's trying to keep the colonies in line. Well, he can keep all of Georgia. Theodosia, she's mine. Love doesn't discriminate between the sinners and the saints. Hamilton, an American musical, is, I would say, maybe the most, outside of maybe The Mandalorian, the most anticipated release Disney Plus has had. I've never seen so much hype across social media in the world of Disney and Disney fandom than Hamilton arriving on Disney Plus. Maybe it's the people I follow, but I just, the level of hype, man, was real. And it was real for me because it's been a musical that I've wanted to see for years. Love the music. Talked about it last week. There's some key songs that have really kind of made it into the rotation of my Spotify playlists. But, you know, it's a full-blown musical, and I knew there's so much that I had yet to experience. And me and Savannah, literally, we watched it, and then we watched it again because it's so good. I don't know how the segment's going to go. I'll be transparent because I was jotting down some notes and stuff. Like, how do I even talk about this musical experience. There's certainly going to be, I guess, spoilers, although it's based on history, so, you know, spoiling history. But it is, we will jump into spoiler territory. So if you have not seen Hamilton yet and you want to experience that unspoiled, I'm going to say this is not the segment for you, because Aaron, we have to get into this. And I don't even know how to begin other than, like, say, hey, remember this song? Remember that scene? Remember this guy? It was so good, wasn't it? It was so good. That's, like, all I've got to say about the whole thing.
Yeah, definitely. I was, you know, I talked about it on previous episodes and how hyped I was for this.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, it's just a favorite thing of mine, and not even just a favorite, like, oh, it's kind of a cool thing that I like. It's a, you know, it's up there with, like, when I say my favorite things in the world, it's like, you know, Disney, Star Wars, you know, Harry Potter, Hamilton, like, all those kind of are all on the same level. And so, you know, I'm not just, you know, I've listened to the music so much. I've seen it live. I've now seen it, the original cast recorded, and I even have merch, you know.
Oh, man.
I have t-shirts, you know. So
nice. Nice.
So, yeah, I'm a huge fan. And so this was a big, I was anticipating it, and I was almost a little worried that I would be disappointed just because of how much, you know, how you can get overhyped about something and then it kind of lets you down.
Exactly. Well, and I'd gotten pretty hyped for it because Hamilton's not something that people have, like, super nuanced opinions on. I'm not going to lie. Like, either I've seen people who don't like it and it's not their thing, and then people who absolutely love it. Like, I don't think I've seen much in between.
I think it goes well with the Disney crowd, because
why is that?
If you grew up with Disney, you grew up on musicals. Every, you know, the Disney animated films, especially when you're talking like that kind of golden age, you know, with Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin, and just every single one of them was basically a musical.
Yeah.
And so you kind of grow up with musical theater, even though you've never been to Broadway. And it's almost, Disney movies almost prime you for being a fan of musical theater.
I mean, I think I'm a great case in point for exactly what you're saying, because I'm someone who loves musicals and musical theater, and I've never seen a single Broadway show. In fact, this was going to be the first Broadway show. Savannah was going to take me end of this year, next year, and then, of course, COVID happened. So we were looking forward to experiencing this on the small screen, but I think it's a perfect example of, like, when deciding, hey, what musical should we as Riley, who's developed a huge love of the art form of Broadway, which one should you see first? And the answer was easily Hamilton.
Right. And I mean, culturally impact wise, like, it's, you know, there's really nothing you can compare it with when it comes to Broadway shows. You know, there are a lot of very popular Broadway shows, but I don't know that there's been one in recent memory that's had the cultural impact that Hamilton has had.
Yes.
And a lot of people have never seen it. You know, it's just...
That's true.
It, you know, a lot of people, if you had the... Because it wasn't cheap to go. You know, it's hard to get tickets. So, and it was only on Broadway for a while, and then it traveled. So it was, even though you may be really wanting to see it, a lot of people had never seen it and only ever had listened to the music. So I thought it was so awesome that they were able to record the original cast and release it as early as they did. You know, they weren't going to release this until, like, next year.
I don't remember the original release plans, but this is definitely the result of the COVID era, where they've really boosted the content on Disney Plus, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was, I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head.
Sure.
It was September of 2021.
Oh, dang. Yeah, yeah.
So they released it, like, I think they were saying something like 14 months early or something like that. So, or maybe 17 months early, something like that. But basically, they released it extremely early. So when the news that this was coming to Disney Plus, when it was first announced, there was still going to be a long wait.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of surprised everyone and went ahead and released it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Happy 4th.
I think the really cool thing that they've done with Disney Plus in general, with is they've really front loaded, I think, a lot of content that they were going to do a slow burn, because I think that Disney was really planning to have sort of, I'm sure their marketers and stuff had done all the case studies on the estimated number of users they were expecting to attract right at launch, and I'm pretty sure that number didn't change a lot based on how incredible their library was. And so I think they were willing to like hold back some stuff to kind of keep a slow roll of new content and slowly build a loyal base and not try to immediately buy an audience that maybe they've got all the core Disney fans, but they don't have the general streaming fans right away. And I really think that they were not ready to go head to head with Netflix as much as they have. And I think Hamilton's falls right into that category where Disney Plus is fashioned itself as a much more direct competitor with, you know, things like Onward, Artemis Fowl, unfortunately. But, you know, going straight to Disney Plus as their primary platform. And I think that shows that it beat their, albeit modest, expectations.
So I remember seeing it for the first time live in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And it changed the way I listened to the music because now I had the visuals to go along with it.
Oh, for sure.
So what was your and Savannah's reaction? I know you guys were familiar with the music, but you had never seen any version of it.
Yes.
Alive. So what was your kind of first reaction when you're starting to see the characters actually acting out the scenes?
Yeah, it's because, and my familiarity with Hamilton in general as a historical figure is limited, but certainly of interest because I love history in general and American history included. And so I knew a bit about Hamilton as a figure, but I really didn't know all of the human drama behind the story. And what I had learned was from some of the songs. So most of the songs I was most familiar with were from the first act. I mean, even from the opening of the first act. And so I think my biggest takeaway was just how incredibly hard some of the emotional beats hit. It really didn't feel like I was learning about a historical figure. It was this weird mishmash of, I think the story was more impactful because I felt this gravity of real history and how these incredibly flawed men interacted with each other. But at the same time, it was this human drama of which, you know, would come right out of something like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or some of my favorite stories growing up. So it's this weird intersection of history, music, and myth that all sort of wrap up into this package that I think is honestly the most creative and effective use of music, story, and history all in one package. It's daring. It's daring. It's different, and I think that's why it became such a hit because there's Hamilton's sort of the musical for anyone. I think it's because of all the cultural elements that it pulls from and that it honestly reframes. I think that's what it's something it does really well. By incorporating rap and hip hop culture and music into the spirit of some of the founding fathers, showcasing their spirit, their flaws, but their humanity in a completely different lens is what I think hit me harder. And I guess to answer your question, Aaron, is I think that's what I was expecting that, but I think what it really significantly beat my expectations in a surprising way as to how effectively it did that.
Yeah, Lin-Manuel Miranda is a genius, in my opinion. And I think that, like, Disney was lucky to get him on Moana. They actually had him doing Moana before Hamilton was a thing. He was already starting to work on Moana, so it was, I think, just a happy coincidence that he became, like, world famous. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, now we can actually use him as part of the marketing.
Yeah.
But even when you listen to Moana, you know, we've talked about Moana and how the music, how great the music is and how it all really blends and ties together.
Yes.
Like beats from this one song will connect to a beat from another song. And it kind of, it weaves together so well. And, you know, Hamilton's the same way, and it takes it to a whole different level.
Yeah.
With so much more music, you know, it's basically two hours and 45 minutes of music.
Yeah.
You know, some musicals, there's a lot of dialogue and then it'll go to a song. This is just song to the next song to the next song. It's 100% just music. I think there's only maybe one scene that is kind of a little bit more drawn out dialogue. Every song kind of connects to the next, and the lyrics are just genius in how they have double, triple meanings. It's something in that what I've appreciated about kind of re-listening to the music as much as I have is you pick up on stuff that you didn't pick up the first time, you know, or the second time or the third time. So it's just, it's a work of art, you know, at the highest level.
It is. And it is extraordinarily layered, and being familiar with some of the music and then even just watching it twice in a row. Like, they're very, honestly, they're very few films. I mean, I would dare say, don't tell anybody, any Star Wars Report listeners, don't you guys dare tattle on me. But like, there are very few Star Wars films that I like immediately want to go back and watch again in recent years. Like where I feel like there's something, it was so dense that I really just need to I missed half of the movie. But that's how I felt with Hamilton. And I've even just digging into, there's a great video essay on YouTube, and I'll toss a link to it, but it's all about the use of motifs and how Miranda doesn't just have the songs that lead into each other that are sort of different themes for characters and thematic elements of the story, but even micro zooms into the level of motifs, these little short phrases, lyrics, or even notes that have specific meaning that matures and changes throughout the musical. And the best example of that, I think, that I can illustrate for why this is easily my favorite musical of all time, is Wait For It, Aaron Burr's song, his theme, really. But he has this sort of, and that's what I started the segment with, this whole paradox between two completely different men who view the world in very different ways at the beginning of the play. Hamilton is brash, bold, always acts, clawed his way out of poverty to the top, sort of the all-American style, and you kind of root for him. It's very American, traditionally speaking, right? And your instinct is to kind of root for that. And Aaron Burr is this cautious, measured man. Talk less, smile more. Wait For It. Like, that is his story, his theme, what's defined his life. And even when it comes to like the woman he loves, he's patient to a fault. But what you learn is, and what's so beautiful about the story is that you learn about Hamilton, who's the quote unquote hero of the story. You learn his flaws and his sins as a man are so closely tied to what were his strengths in the beginning. His brashness, his wit, the power that he commanded at his quill, his ability to write and convince people of things. Those are the things that sort of led to many of his downfalls as a character. And man, I there are literally like a dozen specific musical references I could make just based, but the guy on YouTube, and there's some really great analysis that will do a much better job than I could possibly do. But suffice to say, by the end of the play, as the great face-off happens, as Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton draw pistols in a duel, as they've sort of become, you know, arch rivals, the whole meaning of those two men's weaknesses and strengths has been reversed. And Aaron Burr is finally where he's willing to take the shot. And Alexander Hamilton is paradoxically going to give up his shot and raise his pistol. And in fact, he's the one who will wait for it. And that's probably the most on the nose, or the most through train, I guess, that theme, I guess, carries the main thread of the story most on its shoulders. And it's the most noticeable the first time I'm watching through. But what blows my mind is that there's like two dozen other examples in the same way for all the other characters and their journey as they intertwine. And that's, I think, the best example of why I think Hamilton is honestly certainly a modern classic and the greatest musical of our time. So there you go. That's Riley's opinion. I literally, guys, all I put in the show notes for like the Hamilton topic was Riley has feelings. That's basically it.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone was hoping for like a critical analysis that we were going to like pick apart the negatives and like, we're probably just fanboys at this point of Hamilton. So we're really focusing on the positive.
Although let's be honest, Jonathan Groff, he was spitting way too much.
Oh yeah. There are a couple things that if I was going to be critical, I felt like the sound didn't, like there were times where I felt like the sound was uneven.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And certain characters would kind of fade a little bit and get a little quiet. And I felt like maybe that was because maybe this is a rushed release. They would have perfected it if they kind of took a little bit more time. And it did feel a little bit, and I don't want to use a word like amateur, because obviously it's not an amateur production, but maybe I just felt like that there was some missed editing that they probably would have perfected had they had more time.
Maybe underproduced in the audio department, because it's tough. Yeah. Stage sound is tough, certainly, to replicate the experience of being in, you know, the Richard Rodgers Theater, trying, you know, that's literally designed for, you know, no microphones. The sound just echoes through, and so it's difficult to replicate that on, you know, a 5.1 surround sound mix.
And it's such a dynamic show too, that, you know, the one of the cool things about watching it live, or watching it recorded as opposed to watching it in a theater, is you can zoom right in on the characters.
Yeah, that's true.
Zoom right in on the situations. But the show wasn't necessarily designed for that. So there's a lot going on in the background that every time they zoom in on a character, you're missing that.
I noticed this the second viewing where it was one of the Skylar sisters' songs or motifs. I forget exactly where, but she references her dad and like the decision he was making, or like, I forget the exact lyric, but the point was, her dad was standing behind, and all the cast pointed, and it sort of like is a visual cue to remind you of the family and their relevance to the story, and where Alexander fit into that. It was towards the beginning of the play, but the first time I watched it, I didn't even notice that, because it was kind of a close up on her, and you'd have to look into the background to see. So I kind of figured there was a lot of stagecraft elements that may have been lost.
Yeah, I think that's why I would recommend, like, you know, if people are able and you still and have the opportunity to see it live eventually, this isn't a replacement for seeing it live. It's a great way of viewing it, and getting to see the original cast is something that, you know, is very rare. Now it's not rare because everyone can, but up to this point it was very rare. But I think that going to a theater and actually seeing it live will be a whole different experience. So I would still recommend people to try to do that if you can, if you enjoyed the show.
For sure. Yeah. Any parting thoughts, man? I think, I know I kind of just went on a fanboy rant about how much I love this musical, but I could literally talk about it all night. I'm not even going to lie.
No, everything you were saying, that is something that I completely, you know, agree with, you know, the way that they tied all that stuff together. And the example you used is a good one with wait for it. And I think it's very dynamic and layered and just fun characters. I love the fact that you have the same actors playing different characters in the second part.
I love that too, yeah.
In the second act, because that, you know, you get Hercules Mulligan, who is a very, you know, loud and brash character and confident. And then you get him, the same exact guy playing James Madison, who is like sickly and quiet the whole time. Yeah. You know, it's awesome to see the dynamics that they did. So yeah, I wasn't disappointed, and I've already watched it a few times, and
nice.
And I think it's going to be one of those things that I turn on as kind of like background noise if I'm like doing stuff around the house or whatever. I'll just pop on Hamilton and let it play
I can
listen to the music.
Yeah, we've been, ever since the Frozen 2 documentary, it's been like a nonstop, like when we're cleaning the apartment or something like that, it's now been just Hamilton and Frozen 2 in the background. And that's basically all we do now. Shot, I am not throwing away my shot. Hey yo, I'm just like my country, I'm young, scrappy and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my... And that is going to bring this episode of the Mouse and Castle podcast to a close. I'll tell you what, man, it's fun to kind of play like Hamilton music to tag the show. And it counts, it's Disney now. It's Disney. I want to see Hamilton stuff all over the parks, especially Epcot and the American Pavilion. I just want all of it. I want all of it.
Yeah, there's something that I watched on Disney Plus because of Hamilton, and I was looking at other things available on Disney Plus, and we don't have time to talk about it, but I'll bring it up in our next episode or in a future episode.
Yeah,
I'll talk about it. But it kind of around what they were going to do with the parks and kind of that, you know, kind of representing that era and kind of what got scrapped and what ended up happening. So it's
It is true.
Some
yeah.
interesting stuff.
The Americana side of the parks was a much bigger part of the original vision. So I'll look forward to talking about that with you. Well, hey, guys. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Hope you enjoyed our Hamilton Gush Fest. Hit us up on social media. It's at Mouse and Castle, at Mouse and Castle on Instagram. That's a great way. I've been posting all kinds of pictures on our Instagram. And hey, also, follow us on Twitter. It's a fun time out there, at Mouse and Castle. And I even set up a little landing page for our newsletter. Getting updates pretty much each and every week. You can catch the newsletter version of some of our content, Aaron's hot takes on some of the latest Disney news. We've got another newsletter coming out this week. So make sure you go to the mouseandcastlepodcast.com, mouseandcastlepodcast.com, and click on the newsletter icon. That's also where you'll find all the notes for the podcast episode. And hey, if you enjoy it, make sure that you let your Disney friends know about the Mouse and Castle podcast. You can also leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to the show, especially Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to get the word out. So that's where you can find us. Mr. Goins, tell the good people where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at AVGoins, AVGOINS.
Nice, nice. And then, of course, I'm also on social media at The Riley Guy, R-I-L-E-Y, The Riley Guy. Until next time, folks, thanks for listening. And remember, never throw away your shot.
Tens of thousands of people flood the streets. There are screams and church bells ringing. And as our fallen foes retreat, I hear the drinking song they're singing. Turned upside down. The world turned upside down.
All right, I'm going to go watch it again. Bye. I really thought that was going to be the intermission break, by the way. I was ready.